Welcome to Mother Folklore, at the Irish Rural Podcast, brought to you by the Head Stuff Podcast Network. I'm lucky to be joined today by two of the lads from Imla, Horak O'Cornila.
Hello.
And Fergam Lyon.
Hello.
Lads, you're very welcome to the studio. For those of you who aren't familiar with the work of Imla, they are an Irish music collective, but have sometimes been referred to as an Irish hip-hop act. That's not entirely accurate, would you say?
No, that's like, I think that's maybe like a third at best. And that's, yeah. But definitely not, it's definitely not a hip hop act.
But you're not without some hip hop influences or rap influences, that's among
just,
others.
That's just because I'm in the band and that's all I can do.
Dinna fáin á sami sé leagan fóclá Sís a fápar na chun gannach rudí sila rim a hílma lí Ní sé scad a bhór seo Go dénna mag a gra hím an gailge Má chúchis, má chúas Ní ché tanga a hannig amach as má chlap gan stad Go díga laur meila Má chur an penguin ar ma bhí an deistan Nach am an kíla want
So if I'm at Electric Picnic and well, my buddy wants to go and see, I don't know, Manic Street Preachers Union, and I say, well, Imlay playing the other stage, and they go, who are Imlay? What are they like? How will I describe them? And like that minute it takes them to walk towards the Manic Street Preachers stage.
They might be like nothing you've quite heard in one band. It's like, I don't know, we like...
Yeah, like they're all, I guess they're all sort of, well, not even, like a lot of the elements of the band are things you would have heard in isolation. Like I kind of love folk music or slightly ethereal music. You know, Pork obviously loves hip hop. Kian loves kind of soul music. You know, so it's that mishmash of things, you know, and every odd song kind of has a different vocalist come in, but you know that it's the same minds that are creating the thing. And, you know, and you're kind of going from being a lead singer to being a supporting role to being like, you know, I did everything on this album from guitar, piano, singing, engineering, you know, like, so that, you know, that even if I'm not on a song, you know, that there's probably an influence of me in it. So it's not always an audible or visible presence, but like, you know, everyone's always there.
Excellent.
And for it to have made it on the album, it kind of, everyone needed to kind of, and that, there was never an official, I sign off on that process, but it was like, you know, everyone silently agreed that we liked each other's. I hope.
I don't know. I can honestly say that I genuinely actually got into and loved each and every song, even the songs I had like little to do with. I really got into them, and so I guess I was just really happy that I was able to respect every song for what it was, and that was, I just liked that. That was refreshing.
So legendary music blogger Niler9 is one of Emily's biggest fans, and he wrote some very kind words about you, which I'm going to read out for the benefit of our listeners. There's a groundswell of Gaelic-led bands around the country doing fresh things with the language, and Imlay at the forefront of that. Featuring three vocalists of different shades, singer Fergal Maloney, punk poet style Marcus McNeil, and rapper MC Moped, their self-titled debut album mixes meditative folk, rock and rap styles in our native tongue to impressive effect. A breath of fresh air.
Yay.
High praise indeed.
Yep. Great pun.
Oh yes, a wonderful pun. And Porg, you're also known sometimes as MC Moped.
That is true, yeah.
Please tell us more about this.
Well, I suppose the name is a bit of a bastardization, but I quite like that. Hence, I add misspellings to a lot of things. But it came from hanging out with my friends when I was 19, 18. And I was playing Smuggler's Run 2 and we'd swap trade places. So like somebody else came from the other room because it was like six people or eight people in the next room. And they came and was like, you got to come in, you got to do this, you got to do this. Like, come on, Muppet, get up, get up. And then everyone was like, yeah, Muppet, what are you doing? You should have come in, play the game. It was like, I was already playing a game. I was in the middle of the final with Tok Tok. They were pretty pretty annoyed I didn't come in. They just called me Muppet. And then it was like, just like the ring of it. And then they just said, that's it, you're Muppet now. I was like, fine. You don't get to pick your own nicknames.
Your own nicknames now.
And then I couldn't come up with a stage name that wasn't like really cringeworthy. So I just thought I'd go for the awful one I already had and just turn that into a Muppet from a Muppet.
So you took it back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Excellent. Reappropriated it. Yeah.
That's fantastic. I think that's the way to progress. You know, you can't let anyone own you. And no such nicknames for you, Kirkle, no?
I actually have lived my entire life without nicknames. I think because neither of my names rhyme with anything. My name is Fergal Maloney, and it's just, it doesn't seem to... Although, actually, someone recently called me Fergie Ferg, which is probably the best one I've ever had.
Really?
Yeah.
That's...
I've wanted to call you Fergalino every once in a while, but I just haven't said it yet until now.
Because of the way my surname is spelled, even though my surname is O'Shea, it's spelled O Father S E Father A G H D H A. And in secondary school, that was unfortunately turned into O'Shagirda.
Not unreasonably.
I think it was quite unreasonable.
It's a lot, yeah.
I think it's particularly in my brother's Manus, but it's spelled with a silent GH. And okay. So he got Magnus, which is turned to Maggie. Oh. And then when it turned out he shared a birthday with Margaret Thatcher, the Maggie thing really stuck. It had, you know, double meanings. Good. But he said the worst thing of all was that other people who also had silent GHs in their name mispronounced his name. I was like, you've no excuse. Una. Una with a GH. It's like, Una has no GH in Irish. So he's like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to turn that U father into two O's. And we're going to stick a GH in that was never there in the original. Like, who's in charge?
Yeah, I think my funniest GH moment, well, it's a partial GH moment, was in the airport. My name getting called out 3 times and I didn't recognise it until the 3rd time.
Oh, yeah.
Podrigo Congaila. I'm like, geez, this dude really needs to get to his, he really needs to get to his flight. Like, the first time didn't pay no heed. Second time I was like, shit, that's the second time I think he really want to make a rush. And then the 3rd time she's angry and she's going like, Podrigo Congaila really needs to make his way to the gate. The gate is closing. And I was kind of like reading, lost. And then it just clicked. I was like, Podrigo Congaila. Oh, shit. I was just like, legged it down. And then I went to the desk and it's like the most Irish of Irish looking, like meteorad Irish birds. And she's like, she looked at me and she was mortified. She was like, she just had a complete brain fart. Like, I don't know how she thought that that name was going to get pronounced like that. And I was just like, I looked at her, I was going to say sorry. And then I looked at her and she looked really sorry. And I was like, thanks. I'm in. Thank you.
I think the Irish for brain fart is brimentine, isn't it?
Yeah, that could be.
And it sounds
works.
A bit like, was it, that sounds as brilliantine was the old name for hair oil in the 50s that your granddad would have used when he's going courting.
Really?
But I think it was called brilliantine, was it?
Is that where Brill Cream came from?
I think they may have been rival products at some point, but I think I seem to remember it from a Hignot Titter.
Oh, wait. I suppose that's where the Brill Cream name came from Brillantine, and that it got associated as the product for hair.
I think so. I presume so. I'm not entirely sure, but Brillantine has a nice musical ring to it. We think it's a brain fart.
It's great.
Kind of like Hoover and Hoover. You know, Hoover's just a brand, not the actual device.
This is the thing. And it's a big thing that the BBC have an issue with this sometimes when there was when an incident involving a product hits the news. And the most famous one is Kool-Aid. Like in America, Kool-Aid is synonymous with cults.
Yeah.
And, you know, taking the Kool-Aid. And the people who make this fine product are like, why can't you just say they used a dilutable soft drink? And what like the fact that their name has been dragged through this and they managed to still exist is alarming. But there was a Marmite leak on one of the main motorways in the United Kingdom. Let's say a yeast based product has been spilled all over the road because obviously they you don't want to associate companies with accidents and horrible things.
I'd imagine that's done more good than bad for someone like Hoover, though. You know, like that their company name is literally synonymous with the object.
It has to be. It's a kind of free advertising in a way. I know I met a girl from the Midlands some while back. She asked me if I liked Walker's Tatoes.
How did that go?
Walker's Tatoes. Because tatoes are just crisps. Crisp potatoes, tatoes, crisps.
Sorry, I didn't even catch that when you said it first.
Well, in fairness, that's a perfect example. You probably thought, well, yes. I mean, obviously, what kind of tatoes do you prefer? Do you prefer the tatoes that are corn snacks made by the Perry Company or the tatoes that are made by the Taylor Company?
Oh, I definitely designate between corn snacks and like crisps.
We sometimes, I think we refer to corn snacks as beige goods. Because you have rancheros, meanies, the other ones, wheelies.
Wheelies, yeah, wheelies are pretty good. Banshees were a favourite of mine.
Oh, yeah.
So salty. Just so salty, yeah. So bitter. Yeah.
So they'd be in your rider if you're going to do gigs, is it? Two packs of Banshee bones.
Two packs? I want a box.
out of date from 1997.
you gotta remove all the rectangular wheelies from the pack, otherwise I know you can't handle the lighting equipment. So tell me, you're obviously accomplished musicians and you both have an interest in Irish. Would you say that your journey towards Irish has been similar or different?
I would say definitely different. My own was a fairly normal Dublin sort of experience where I grew up and Irish was just a pain. And then I kind of got to secondary school and I started going to the Gaeltacht in Connemara.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think that's where I kind of started to associate Irish with things that I liked, you know, because that was kind of first experience, even like, you know, you're down there playing sports and music and there's girls everywhere. And it's like, so I had that, you know, 3-4 summers in a row, and that always left me with a kind of nice association, which I think a lot of people who didn't have that Gaeltacht experience maybe didn't leave school with. To mm-hmm. them, it was Antriel and it was Taoiseal Ginnadoc, and they never quite got any joy from it, I suppose.
Okay.
Whereas early on, I had that association. And then I left school and I kind of didn't do much with it for a while. I was studying and doing various things and playing in an English language band. And then I was in a band called the Dirty Nines. And there was sort of an opportunity to go on this TG Cahir show called Desh Rock. And Cian, who's also an Imlay and was in the Dirty Nines with me, had been volunteering in Radio Nilifa for a while at that point. So he was like, look, we could do this. Mm-hmm. All we have to do is kind of translate a couple of songs into Irish. And we went for it. And as we kind of went through that competition, we actually got to the last two stages or whatever. And we were like, you know, we should just write a song in Irish.
Yeah.
You know, instead of this translating thing, which is actually more trouble than it's worth. And we did that and we won that competition, which kind of led us to our debut album and doing that stuff. And the Dirty Nines kind of came to a point where we were playing half Irish gigs and half English gigs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bit of an identity crisis, I think, because, you know, people who liked our Irish stuff were kind of like, oh, they're doing loads of English songs. And then people who wanted to hear our English songs were like, oh, what's this Irish mm-hmm. thing? They didn't kind of get it. And the band sort of, I don't know, like a lot of bands, dissipated a bit. And then it was Cian who kind of came back to Imlay. And his idea was to kind of get these different singers and kind of a collective, basically, was his idea. And when he asked me about it, he was like, oh, just so you know, I'm putting this thing together. I don't know if you've been writing much or whatever. And, you know, it kind of brought it back to me then that, like, you know, he would send me over lyrics sometimes. And I would, at the time, I was doing a master's in music and media technology, which is okay. kind of a lot of contemporary music. And, you know, I guess I was always looking for little things to make the pieces of music different.
Okay.
And kind of writing in Irish kind of came back to me at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it was during that course that I wrote one of the songs of the album, Gujo, Gujo, Gan Stad. And it was nice because the language kind of came back to me in like a really nice, natural way. And then I was kind of listening to like Eric Satie piano pieces and just that kind of blend, I guess, was a bit unusual maybe. And But Irish just came back to me in a way that I was like, well, I can use it to kind of set my music apart from maybe other music I've been writing. And as I was doing that again, I found, I don't know, is it like an atavistic kind of deep knowledge or something, but it just feels natural to sing that way, even though I'm not a native speaker, I'm not fluent even still. But there's something kind of deeper about singing it that's like, God, you know, sometimes I sing it and I'm like, God, it actually gets me, even though I might not even know like what I'm saying, which is terrible. But it's music at the end of the day. It's not a written down piece. And
I think that's something that it feels right for you to sing in Irish. I mean, even though you may not identify as a native speaker or one of these very hardcore individuals, it's something that feels very right for you. And that comes through and gives the music great authenticity. I found that one of the things that really impressed me was I was listening to it. I didn't feel that it had been changed from English to Irish. I felt that it was very much Irish as a starting point in all the songs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, just in terms of our own integrity and stuff, I think we much prefer that approach. And well, like the other guys in the band would never write in English, probably. Whereas that would be more my.
I've written a page or two in English.
A page or two.
It could happen.
But as in, I guess I'm trying to say is that the thing at the moment, and has been for the last 5 years, is that, you know, you see these albums come out and it's translated songs and it's weird pronunciation, and you know, if you do know a bit of Irish, it kind of catches your ear a bit. I don't know, I don't always love those albums, yeah. The translated stuff, you know, like it's great Ed Sheeran doing an Irish song, but when I was listening to it, I was didn't sit quite right, maybe.
There is a tradition, I think, like I have a big interest in Scandinavian pop music, and I, when from German friends, I'm aware of, say, some German pop music, and you find, obviously, there's people who write in their own language in Sweden, in Germany, and there's other people who, even though they don't sell abroad, they still sing in English because they feel that's what people are used to hearing pop music in. Having said that, there's also a market for people who are prepared to listen to music such as opera or certain Celtic mysticism stuff that they don't mind not knowing the lyrics. Mm, whereas
the Sigur Rós kind of...
Yeah, the Sigur Rós, the Hobby Popola thing, the idea is that, you know, they're not too fussed. And I don't think anyone's outed Sigur Rós's lyrics for all being about, you know, horrible things. But you've chosen actually to identify a third path where actually you are singing in Irish, but you're not encouraging people to ignore the lyrics. You're inviting people to give them a shot.
Yeah. I'm like...
Is that a fair assessment?
I guess I can only speak for me in terms of the lyrics, in the sense that, like, I feel like they should hold up to scrutiny if put under scrutiny, but it's not about, like, purely listening to every single word from beginning to end and feeling like you're on top of it. Like, I love listening to songs and, like, something strikes you that, like, the 300th time you've listened to something, and you're like, oh, wow, okay. I've never actually bothered to, like, open my ears for that enunciation, the way that's been said, or that end of the sentence always been like held up by something I've heard before, and I'm happy in my head, you know, thinking about that, and then I always end up skipping a couple of bars, and then I'm somewhere else, you know. Lyrics in Irish, I do it because it feels good. I do it because it feels natural. I definitely, let's say vocabulary would probably be greater in English, but when I write in English, it's really formal, and it's because I have a tendency to read too many old novels, so my English sometimes gets a bit archaic when I'm writing.
In terms of, you know, lyrics in general, I think when some people, if one person was to undertake to write a song in Irish, not yourselves, but they might think, oh, I gotta get my tishtal ginnadh chraish, you know, better use a bit of mo here and so forth.
a little bit of mo.
You know, because if particularly if it's a song, I think one, there's a great YouTube video explaining the Mo Cunilac, which uses the lyrics of Beyonce's If I Were a Boy to explain the mo, is obviously because it's a song about the mo. But in general, that aside, like, there's a lot of great songs in English, and if you subject them to scrutiny, they don't require it. Like, the big thing I found was Alanis Morissette's lyrics for Ironic. She's got an awful baiting for them.
Yeah.
Whereas around the same time, Sabotage came out, and people said, well, the lyrics, that don't make any sense either. We don't care, it's a banger, and besides, it's recorded by men, so we're not going to hold it to the same standards.
Yeah.
So, like, I think it's and then similarly, I'm a huge fan of the Pixies, but a lot of those lyrics, I mean, they don't hold up as sentences, you know, and they don't hold up as maybe even continuous ideas. Yeah. And even when they do, they don't hold up as good ideas sometimes, but the tune is great. And sometimes
it's about just feeling of when you're listening to it. It's the feeling that it evokes when you're listening to it.
A pattern of syllables.
That's it. Like, I know people who love music, but literally they could not tell you what 10 songs are about. You know, they don't care.
Yeah.
You know, it's flashes of images. It's stuff. It's like rhyming. There's a pleasantness to that, hearing that, or, you know, like a surprising chord. It's like language is, I guess different people get different things from music. And some people don't care about language, which is great, you know? And then some people do, you know, and I guess you want, in Imlay, I think we want our songs to work on all those levels. For the people who just want to listen to a piece of music, it should function that way too, you know, with the craft of it. And then for people who want to dig deeper, it should work as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with that entirely.
Because if one of those are off, there's holes in it, you know, and it's not a good piece, probably.
Have you been happy, interested, struck, moved by, from dealing with maybe radio stations or other promoters about being an Irish language act, getting gigs, getting play? Has that experience been positive?
Yeah, it's been pretty positive, but yeah, it's always this thing, like, you've put like a shed load of time into making it, And then you're like, you're meant to put on your like your selling hat then, like, you know, and you're meant to like flog it. And, you know, you like, let's say like our social media accounts, like now it's primarily Cian doing it. I'm like, I tried helping out for a while, but that absolutely disgusts me. I just like it makes me so depressed. I just told him one day I can't do that. But like when it comes to like, yeah, the gigs, I'm like festivals, big festivals, art festivals, always really fun. They're amazing because that's a crowd that really wants to go and listen to music. Like the Ruby Sessions last time we played, that was really class because that's a crowd that are just going to sit there and really listen to it. So like that's weird in itself. I suppose we're lucky that there's a lot of gigs out there that are kind of centered around Irish language where there is money available, and if you're good enough then you will get paid, and we're just lucky enough to be good enough at the moment. So providing we don't deteriorate there, those little crumbs will be there. But yeah, we don't make huge money at all. It's a passion, it's a thing that we love doing. The only thing that we tried to say to ourselves at the start was like, we can't lose money on this. We can't just be like, you know, throwing money at it all the time.
Yeah, it's not amateur dramatics or something. A dangerous hobby.
No, and that's why the Gael Inn thing was so great for us, because it meant I did an album a couple of years ago, and literally we had to do gig after gig just to fund it, and you know, there's probably some out of our own pockets and everything. Whereas this time to have like a patron was just fantastic, and it allows you to concentrate then on what you should be concentrating on, and it means that by the end of the process you're not kind of exhausted from trying to do all these other things to raise the funds, and then also keep your artistic self sort of uncorrupted through that process, and have, you know, so it's great to have that support financially. And yep,
that is great.
And financially, and just in terms of like their reputation and stuff. Like I was saying earlier, that sometimes people leave school with a negative impression of Irish, and part of that is to try and show them that there's a life outside, there's a place for Irish outside their books, and after school as well, you know. So I suppose I wouldn't denigrate it at all, but I know what you're saying. Like I was saying earlier, that sometimes people leave school with a negative impression of Irish.
Imagine.
And part of that is to try and show them that there's a life outside. There's a place for Irish outside their books, and after school as well, you know. So I suppose I wouldn't denigrate it at all, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah, and this was, I mean, there's always a temptation because the whole audience, and they're all in one place and they're in school and they can't escape from it. Like, that's not really what it's about. You want people to actually come to it voluntarily.
Yeah.
Tell me about the creative process you got. I mean, it's 3-4 songwriters?
Yep.
And is it a case of writing individually and bringing it to the group and having it finished, or is it a case of writing together?
It was all quite organic. You could probably go to each song on the album and it was written in a different way. Like some of them we literally wrote in the room together. I know we did it with Creakfurt and Ilorna Hiha. Those two were written just definitely like literally on the fly, and you're literally just running with it, because if you stop or if you go out and make a cup of tea, you're going to lose. You're going to lose the muse or whatever. And
I gotta keep writing. I gotta keep writing. Oh no, I'm not gonna come up with anything. Right.
You know, like one of them, Good Joe. I wrote for a college project. You know, I like you know, Pork can probably talk about Funerum and a few of the others. But yeah, like each song I think has had different source, and then sometimes Pork will have something, and then I might think of something to add to it. You know, and it's often that as well, that somebody has a kernel of an idea and then people put their own on it.
I'd write verses. I go off on tangents, if you haven't noticed, but I'll especially be going off on pretty large tangents today because I'm remarkably hungover after last night's pop-up Gaeltacht.
How was it? I haven't been to one yet. I've been meaning to. Obviously, for me, babysitting or my child-minding issues tend to obviously come first. And it'd be great to see popping on in. But I'm really looking forward to hopefully going for November.
It's a good buzz. You know, I'm like, I go to one of them and it's just like going to a normal pub night and like, you know, I find a place where I'm happy to stand and I just talk to the people that I'm generally happy talking with. I'm like, I definitely avoid doing the rounds because you just get stuck. It's like, I really like pop-up culture. I like how there's no pressure with it. Mm-hmm. You just show up and it's just like a normal night in the pub, except there's like a surprising amount of people who speak in Irish.
And it's doing so well. It's something wonderful to hear that kids are being turned away for being too young, trying to sneak into a pop-up concert.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Obviously, yes, don't serve anyone under 18 because that's wrong. You know, it's an adults event. It's in a bar.
Yeah. What I like about it as well is that, you know, sometimes you might have an idea and you'll push it and you're like, oh, is this not catching on because I'm not promoting it the right way or explaining it the right way, whereas that just seemed so organic that like, no, I'm not saying they didn't put, I don't know how much effort they put into promoting it or anything, but it seemed like it was just fulfilling a need that people didn't know was there yet. And it just sort of caught fire, which is exactly what you want.
Like, I think my impression was that the lads were hoping to get some response. I think the fact they got such a great response in their first one meant it encouraged them to really, really work hard on the next ones. And there's been one in Shanghai.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. I'm seeing New York City as well and all over the place. Oh. So it's there's definitely interest and there's definitely appetite for it, which is fantastic. And obviously that can spill over to other areas like television programs, plays, music, things like what you're doing. And it's been great. There's definitely a movement happening.
Mm.
It's nice to be in any way associated with it.
Absolutely.
Do you have a rhyme book?
I have had many rhyme books and I once...
Ar-sheshin and freshin.
I'm this type of character who's like, I'm always kind of like happy on the outside and then, like deplorably depressed on the inside and just sometimes that gets to the surface. So like I can remember I had a whole collection of rhyme books when I was probably in my early 20s and I was just like, you need to purge yourself every year. It's like, I don't know, I don't deal well with winter, like I don't like all the dark arts, but so I think these actually all happened in winter, so I was actually probably connected with that. But anyway, I used to burn them because I used to just write loads and I used to think that 95%, all of it was crap.
Okay.
I really thought most of it was really crap. I'd take like words or like, you know, a sentence or half a sentence or that feeling and then just transpose that feeling into something completely different.
Mm-hmm. But there's a lot to be said for actually producing enough garbage that somebody said it's hard to write 100 bad songs. That eventually, if you actually, you can write 96 bad ones, but if you write 100 songs, you will write 3 or 4 good ones, even if you're,
I was listening to Lisa Hannigan, or reading an interview about her new album recently, and she was kind of saying that writing bad songs, you need to do it. It's almost the scaffolding for the good ones. Yeah. You know, that if you haven't been writing for a year, you're probably not, your first one probably isn't going to be good. You kind of need to, I don't know, I guess it's just a mental image of the process, but she's right, you know. You do, the more you write, the better you get.
Build up a pile of corpses till you get one that stands up tall.
So what I like to ask my guests when they come in is their favourite and least favourite Irish word.
Jesus, I really struggle with favourites. My powers of recollection are abysmal.
While you're thinking about it, maybe I can ask about other music in Irish that you enjoy.
I know quite mainstream, but I absolutely love the Gloaming.
Oh yes.
I just like when I first heard them and saw, I think, some of their gigs from the concert hall on YouTube even, I was just absolutely blown away that you could get these people from these disparate disciplines, a bit like not a million miles from what we're trying to do, and it just worked so well and each person was such a master of their own domain, but yet there was an overall you know, they were all being very generous musicians in terms of functional in the band, and just Irla's voice is incredible to me, you know. There's probably no one better.
For sure.
From what I've heard anyway. But as like, in terms of performing songs in Irish, I think they're doing the language big favours.
Yes.
Because they do have that Sigur Rós quality where people who don't speak Irish can listen to that and they'd be tearing up and they'd be, you know, there's an emotive quality to it that's a universal. Mm-hmm. Well, like in terms of Western keys and, you know, there's a bit of that, but yeah.
Great stuff.
Best live acts for me, the best one I've seen in recent times is definitely the Sangana Family. They were playing Forbidden Fruit, and I went there and I brought my girlfriend there, and like, she's pretty cool, but I had no idea how she'd like it. I'd never heard her listening to her Sangana Family, and then she was like, we were just like both over the moon. So was everyone there. Like, yo, even like these things, like everyone's taking their t-shirt off and spinning it around. It just makes it. It just like really makes it. Like, I just didn't want it to end, and I just remember like just the whole like feeling of watching these guys like kill it. And then there's people queuing out in the rain, and they're just standing there, and they're not going, and nobody else is leaving. Like, so they're gonna still have to wait out there, just hoping that they'll get to step in under the awning and like get to like really dance. They make me feel happy. They're pretty special.
How do you feel about finishing shows with the national anthem? We were talking about this in a recent episode. It's a good way to get people to stop demanding encores.
Yeah.
Just bring the lights on, see who's been shifting.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Not a big fan. I remember being forced to stand up for a version of the national anthem, like a hip hop version. I think it was at the like a public gaga, like 6 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And the stage manager made me stand up, and I was like, everyone stood up. Well, most people stood up. I was at the front with a friend, Chris Chapman, and we didn't stand up. We were just like, we're standing up for this.
You took a knee.
We took a seat. We stayed there and we weren't getting up. And then the stage manager comes down and she's like, "Come on, get up! We're all doing this together." It's like, no, this is blasphemy. I mightn't even feel like standing up. It was just the normal national anthem. Never mind this weird joke that this dude's doing. And I was like, I don't like it. I'm not respecting any part of this. Like, I'm not getting up. No way.
Serge Gainsbourg version.
Yeah. And then a mate of mine, Brophy, drew it like a, she was standing at the back, and I don't think she got really annoyed and threw like a drink over the crowd and nailed all of us on the front rows, and we just got soaked by her drink. And then we had the stage manager in front of us hassling us up, and we eventually had to just get up because nothing was going to happen. This was going to be a prolonged thing. Like, the show, it wasn't going to go on. The show had stopped because we were not standing up. I really dislike that moment. It makes me really angry.
Anybody listening today has a copy, a bootleg recording of that wrapped Aaron Levine.
Oh, yeah.
I want it. Contact me on Twitter at the Irish Four. Or wherever else, if you know me, find me. I want that tape. I want it. I want it. So before we finish up, lads, what's next for Emily?
What is next? Ruby Sessions?
Yeah, so we're releasing basically a vinyl version of our debut album.
Ooh.
With sort of two extra tracks that we've recorded in the last 3 months. It was just Gwaelin maybe felt it was the demand for it, and so basically it's kind of given the album a second life. It gave us a chance to record a couple more songs that we had, you know, we're kind of at 70% completion, and it's gonna be a lovely thing to have for Christmas presents for your loved ones.
Absolutely.
And we're gonna have another little launch, but it's not fully confirmed yet, but a proper launch for the vinyl.
Fantastic. Will that be in Dublin?
It will.
Excellent. Barry Farrell, thank you both so much for coming on and giving your time today. And
thank you.
Best luck with the album and your forthcoming gigs, and come back anytime.
Thanks, Derek.
Cheers, man. It was a pleasure.
Cheers.
And to all you, thank you very much for listening today. I want to thank Brian for producing the show today. I want to thank Kirsten Shield for doing the artwork. If you've enjoyed the show, please like it and subscribe to it, share it on social networking, tell your friends about it. In the meantime, Slán.
This has been a production of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Okay. If it stops for any reason, just panic. Okay, freak out, yes.